Good morning, everybody. And we're continuing on the subject of Mukta Machnas Gufay, something that is Mukta because of the fact that it is nothing particular. It's not a kli. It doesn't have any status to it. And therefore, it has, or it's something that you cannot use on Shabbos. And not because its usage is also that will become a kli shenach al isur, but we said that it's not ra'uy for regular usage, and it doesn't have it's not food, and it's not a utensil. Examples that we gave last week would be the most typical is etzim v'avonim, as in sticks and stones, and sand and wood, and those type of, even if it's not set aside as building material, if it's lying in your yard, that's all. Mukta de lechazi lemidi, mukta that has no purpose in Shabbos. Then we spoke about non-edible items, which come from food sources, so if they're taka not edible, so then there's tried to say that they're also mukta machnas gufay. So we gave examples of peels and pits and shells and food that's gone off, food that hasn't been cooked, food that's asur, depending on who it's asur for. So we were discussing those cases of various cases of food, so I'm going to continue with those examples of food. So and There's some fine details that we have to go to. The last thing we mentioned was something which is also now, but after Shabbos becomes mutter. So even though essentially it's edible and it's mutter to eat, it's not like something which is treif, and therefore you can never eat it. So that would be a tzad to say that it's mutter, unless you can give it to an animal. So it has to be something that is, cannot even give it to a goy, an animal, and it's always asur. So then takas mutter, something which is temporarily asur. Nevertheless, and we gave the example like a freshly laid egg on Shabbos, which is molad, or the leftover oil in a candle, a fruit or a leaf that fell off a tree. After Shabbos, all these things will be regular and can be used. Right now, they are mukta and remain that way the whole of Shabbos. So now we talk about food, which is asur to eat, for example, straight. Even if it's cooked, even if it is physically edible, but halachically inedible. But since it is possible to give it to a goy or to give it to an animal, then we say that it is not mukta because you can have usage out of it. So food that has usage does not become mukta. It's only food that has A, you can't eat it, and B, you can't even give it to someone, something else. We also gave an example of something which is asur on the whole world, is if a person made a neder, that something I own is asur b'hanah to the whole world, is mukta over Shabbos, because a person has in his ability to create an isur on something that he owns. You cannot do that to something he does not own. You can't make a neder on your friend's item and say that it is asur al kala olam kulo, that you cannot do. But something that's yours, you can create an isur on such an item, and no one can eat it or have anah from it. Such an item will become mukta. However, if the owner made a neder that only asked it on himself, so then we'll say that since it is ra'uy, it is usable by other Jews, so then it is still considered food and it's edible. It's just the owner has, so to speak, ostracized, it's pushed it aside. So then we'll say that's for him. It's also to eat, but it doesn't make it mukta because it's usable for other things. An example of this in halacha is brought down when a goy does a malacha for a yidum Shabbos. For example, if a goy brings a package from outside the tchum and he brings it on Shabbos and delivers it, so we say that it is also for the person who was the subject of its delivery, who was delivered, say, for the homeowner. So for that person, it's also contained to have hanah from this item that the goy did the melacha from on Shabbos. It's also contained to have hanah from it. But for the rest of the family, who it was not intended for, the discussion, who's considered part of the family, not considered part of the family, but just for simplicity's sake, those who were not the intended recipients, they do not have an isur and they can use it, eat it, whatever it is. So you have someone sent you a box of chocolates in the mail, and you believe that the goy picked up and delivered this box of chocolates from outside of town. It came from outside the tchum. So then, whoever is the recipient of the box of chocolates can't eat the chocolates, but anybody else can. Therefore, we say the chocolates are not booked. So that would be an example of something that is also to eat by one person, but mukta for others does not get a status of mukta. Another example would be if a person made a dough and was careful to make sure that there was no problems of tumah and tara, not a practical application today, because we are all tummy, and therefore the moment we make food, the food becomes tummy. But were a person to be in a status of halachic purity, as in tahara, and made a dough, now you separate challah from that dough. So that challah, although it's also for most Yidden to eat challah, because it is intended for the kohen, but since the kohen can eat it, so therefore it is edible to some Jews. That means that it's not considered as mukta. It actually could be possible if the dough was made with a liquid that is not one of the seven liquids, which is machshir heiros for tumah. Just a total off the topic aside, the halacha is that food that grows cannot become tummy unless it has been in contact with one of the seven liquids. There's a list of seven liquids, and when the food comes in contact with one of the seven liquids, it also depends how it came, kind of came by mistake or purposely, is it with his knowledge, without his knowledge, the whole discussion. But once it comes in contact with a liquid, so then it becomes kuch shel kabel tumah, it becomes ready to receive tumah. If it did not come into contact with the liquid, then it cannot become tummy and remains tahar. So one way to produce a food that is edible and tahar is to make sure that the food never comes into contact with one of these seven liquids. A acronym to remember the seven liquids is Yad Shochatam, Yud Dalet Shin Ches Tes Dalet Mem. See how quickly I can recall it. Yain, Dvash, Shemen, Cholov, Tau, Dam, and Mine. So if it's not into one of these categories, then if you use a pure fruit juice, which is not oil or wine, so you made a dough, say, with apple juice, that was not made from concentrate and never came to contact with water. You also got to be sure that the flour wasn't washed before it was ground, which is also not for sure that most of our flowers apparently are washed. The stuff in the space up about comments with our flowers. But if you know that there was a dry grinding and it never came to contact with water, and then you make a dough with apple juice, then this food, this challah that you, the subsequent dough that you make would actually be tahor. If you took off challah, that challah would be ra'u for kohen to eat. The mice, if we don't have any kohanim we can eat it because our kohanim are tummy, and you can only eat challah if you're tahor. But as I said, this is all theoretics, just to explain the point. We took off a minute on a side point of tumah and tahara, but it's an example of something which is also for some and mutter for others, and therefore we say that it does not get a status of mukta. Another example of this would be kidneys on Pesach. Ashkenazim don't eat kidneys because of the zera that was made by the Rishonim. Sfardim generally, it's not a blanket rule. There's definitely hunger amongst the Sfardim, but generally Sfardim do eat kidneys. The fact that some Sfardim eat kidneys is enough to make it that it is not considered mukta. Or another example would be food on Yom Kippur. Food on Yom Kippur is also to eat. Therefore, if it's also to eat, it should be mukta. But since food can be fed to children, so therefore it is ra'u for children, so therefore there's no problem of it on, no problem of handling it on Yom Kippur because it's not become mukta. It's a separate issue. One shouldn't handle food unnecessarily on a fast day, at least on Yom Kippur. We mentioned other fast days with that, but on Yom Kippur we mentioned unnecessarily handle food, but a zichud does not have the status of mukta. Another interesting repercussion of the salafa would be when you have Erev Pesach is on a Shabbos. Seder night is going to be on a Motzei Shabbos, Erev Pesach is on a Shabbos. So now we have that at 10 o'clock in the morning, approximately, the chometz gets into changes its status. Until 10 o'clock in the morning, the chometz is mutter, permissible to be eaten, and permissible to be used. From 10 to 11, it becomes also to eat, but you can still derive benefit from it. You can give it to a goy, you can feed it to an animal. And after 11 o'clock, midrabbanan, it is also even to have an offram, and after 12 o'clock it begins to arise. So now it doesn't really make a difference. We said earlier that whether the isur is derabanan or daraisa, once it is asur and we're not going to eat it, so then it becomes asur b'hano. If it's asur b'hano, even if it's midirabanan, it is asur to move it, becomes muktzah. Therefore, chametz on Friday night and on Shabbos morning, even after the 10 o'clock deadline, meaning the first deadline of isur achila, but it is still permissible to derive benefit from it, is not yet mukta, but after the 11 o'clock deadline, it actually becomes mukta. If one finds it after this time, then you do not pick it up and discard it, but rather you cover it. You take another utensil and cover it and leave it that way until Moitzichad, where you would do what is necessary on Yom Tov, as in minimize as much as possible your direct contact with the chametz and go and burn it. So that's one example. Another example would be if you have something which became asur, and its isur isn't isur achila and isur hanah. It is forbidden to eat it as well as derive benefit from it. And an example that not every treif is that way. If you have something which was nevela, that is just asur b'achila, it's not asur b'hanah. The treif meat, for example, or some item that you have that has a treif ingredient inside it, generally speaking, they are forbidden to eat, but you're allowed to have hanah from it. The one case of something which is forbidden even in hanah is basar b'chala, the mixing of meat and milk together. We know that it says in the Torah, Lo savash kibbeh chalev imo, one shall not cook a kid goat in the milk of its mother. And there we learn the isur basar b'chala. The Torah says it three times, so we learn three stages to the isur. One is that it's also to eat. Second one is also to have benefit from it. And the third one is that you're not even allowed to cook it. Now the isur basar b'chalav in its true form is when the meat and the milk are cooked together. The resulting product now becomes a quintessential basar b'chalav isur and is also b'hanah. And if you have such a thing, whether it happened before Shabbos or on Shabbos, if you have such a thing in your house, practical example is obviously if a mistake happens in the kitchen. But another example is pet food. One has to be aware that pet food might have milk mixed in together. It's a good challenge to ask on the various different types of pet food, depending what the source of it is, whether there's an isur basar b'chalav in non-kosher meat. If the meat comes from a non-kosher animal, as far as I remember, it's no isur basar b'chalav, but if it comes from a kosher animal, there would be. So if it's horse's meat, then there wouldn't be a problem. But if it's cow meat, it would be a problem. Not all cases of basar b'chalav are asur b'hanah. Some cases which are limited in their isur, but we're machmir, for example, if you have milk that's spilt on a piece of meat, but it wasn't cooked together, even if the milk was warm, it's a question of how far the milk mixed with the meat and how far it got, and whether the whole piece of meat is asur or only part of the meat is asur. We're very machmir in our practicalities of whether we're going to eat such a piece of meat, but to say that it's forbidden in having benefit from it is taking it a lot further, and therefore we're going to say that it's permissible to have benefit from such a thing, and therefore it would be non-mukta on Shabbos. Therefore, not all cases of things that we consider treif to eat are going to be mukta automatically. Some more items of things that we tend to ingest that could be mukta would be medication. The medication that is not taken on a regular basis, and there is no sick person in the house right now. Therefore, this medication when Shabbos came in was not particularly set aside for a particular person. So we say that such medication would be mukta on Shabbos, because generally you should not take medication on Shabbos except for the various exceptions. If you have a sick person in the house, so then your akamol is going to be used for that person, so then akamol is not mukta. However, that doesn't mean that just because it's mukta you can't take akamol. If a person gets sick on Shabbos, and to the extent that he requires medication, then the medication can be administered, but one has to take into account that it is mukta and you are moving mukta in order to take the medication, which means minimize the amount that you're going to use it. Don't put it down and pick it up and put it here and then leave it here. But just remember that when you take it, you're taking it to take the medication and then leave it. Don't carry on moving around the mukta. Obviously, all medications that a person needs on a regular basis, whether it's because they have an acute health situation or regular, you know, people take all sorts of medications for conditions, whether they be cholesterol or high blood pressure or diabetes, or a million and one illnesses that we can all be thankful that if we have one or two of them, we don't have the other million of them. So whatever medication a person takes, it is obviously those medications are ra'oi and for the person who needs them, therefore they are not to the mukta. Another interesting example, just now not moving away from food, would be sharpness. If you have an item of clothing that has sharpness inside it, it's also to wear it, and therefore we consider this clothing as mukta. It has no purpose for you. Not only that, if it is an item of clothing that requires checking, and you have not yet checked it, so we say not to wear it until you've had it checked, that also would be considered mukta, because at the moment it's not a question of whether it has a badai issue or not, whether it certainly has mukta. It's a question of, am I going to wear it or not? I'm not going to wear it because it requires checking. Therefore, since it requires checking, it is considered as not wearable, and therefore it is mukta. What requires checking is a shear in itself, and I'm not going to go into it. If a goy owns a piece of mukta item, so that doesn't really make it useful for a yid, and therefore essentially it doesn't make it, but it's totally os mukta. You have, for example, we said fruit that fell off a tree is mukta, but really a goy could pick it up and eat it. But we're talking about when we discuss it in these type of things that we saw, we discussed it in the realm of klal Yisrael. However, if a goy comes to your house, for example, and he's wearing a coat that has sharpness or sopic sharpness to the extent that you would not wear it because you don't know what's inside it, there's a high chance of it being sharpness. Nevertheless, if the guy gives you his coat and says, please hang it up, or can you even offer it? You say, can I take your coat and hang it up? That is permissible on Shabbos because it's not set aside for your use, it's for his use, and since it's his, and he's allowed to wear it, therefore there's no, you're not going to say that it's mukta. Another example of mukta machmas gufoy would be coins, or tokens, or magnetic cards, whether they be credit cards, or membership cards, in various places, like we have here at Kubat Folim, or other forms of magnetic cards, Rav-Kav cards, and all the rest. They're all considered as mukta machmas gufoy, and therefore cannot be moved at all on Shabbos. I feel it's sort of good for Makoima, they're not considered Kalim. An exception to the rule would be a coin that has been set aside for a non-mukta use. For example, you have a coin that has been put into a pendant, or a ring, or a piece of jewelry, or something like that, and it's permanently placed in this and used as jewelry, so it no longer gets its status as a coin. What's interesting, I don't know anybody who does this, but I saw it brought down, that if someone has a token, and in Hebrew they call them an asimon, and in the olden days it had a certain value to it, or if you had a coin that you hang on your necklace, but it wasn't just for beauty, it also had a secondary use, that when you had to take Tumas and Maestras, you now have a coin to be mechabel your Maestras Sheni on, so you're actually using the monetary value of the coin when it suits you. So you're not using this coin to trade. You're not buying and selling because you're not giving the coin away when you purchase something, but you're using the value of the coin to help you, as I said, to be poida your Maisa Sheni or Kerem Ravai, and later you'll remove that value onto another coin, which you then destroy, and you can keep using the original coin or put Chamura and the whole discussion of Maisa Sheni. But the fact is that you are using the coin that even though you've set it as a pendant, but nevertheless you're also using its monetary value, in that case it will retain its mukta status and you cannot wear such a item on Shabbos. A corpse or a cadaver is mukta on Shabbos. There are exceptions in the way we treat such mukta because of Kavod HaMeis. Therefore we have various exceptions that are put into account, that we will do certain types of moving the mukta, which generally we say is not permissible, but for the sake of a mace, we say that it is permissible. One of the examples is what we call kick of a tinnik. When we learn about bosses, we'll see that when you have a bosses that has mukta on it, you can't move the mukta just because it's on a bosses, but
there's some sort of trick that if you put a piece of bread on something, so you can move the item underneath in order to carry the bread. Generally speaking, we say you cannot do that on Shabbos. You cannot take a piece of bread and put it on a piece of raw meat. You have raw meat in your freezer, so you put a piece of bread on the raw meat, and now you move the raw meat around because you say, oh, I'm carrying the bread. That we generally say is not permissible. The exception to the rule would be the case of mace, but that's because Kavod HaMeis, we have the very special rules. We don't bury people on Shabbos, but we try as much as possible to avoid Zion HaMeis, and they shouldn't get into something that will be considered as a disgrace, and therefore we Kavod HaMeis, we will move the mace from where there is. One of the examples brought down is that if a person has passed away in his bed, a bed has a mattress and has blankets and pillows and all the rest, which will slow down the possibility of the body cooling off, and therefore the body stays warm longer, which is not advantageous for a body. Rather, we want the body to be as cool as possible until burial, so that it retains its dignity, and therefore the halacha is to put it onto the floor. So the floor is a much cooler spot than the bed. That's one of the things that we would do on Shabbos, is move a body from a bed to the floor. Okay, enough the halachos of the mace, but that's another example of something which is muktzeh machnas gufoi. Another example of muktzeh machnas gufoi is an animal. All animals, whether they be domesticated or not, are considered as muktzeh. The exception to the rule that is agreed on by everybody is when it involves tzar balei chayim. So we have the halacha brings down, for example, an animal that fell into a water canal. So we try encourage the animal to come up on its own by throwing non-mukta items into the canal so that the animal can step on them and then climb out. But if for whatever reason the animal cannot do it, and the animal is stuck in this place and cannot come out and is suffering, for example, you cannot feed it in that place and the animal's hungry, whatever the case may be, then you can actually move the mukta, because we learn from that tzar balei chayim is the doraisa according to a lot of opinions, and therefore the doraisa of tzar balei chayim is dosher the mukta, which is the rabbanon, and therefore even according to the opinion of tzar balei chayim is not doraisa. If the halacha legabe Shabbos, we say that tzar balei chayim is dosher mukta if you have no other way out. So if you have, for example, a bird in a cage that is in the sun, and the bird is suffering from the heat, so the simplest would be to throw a blanket over the cage, give the bird some shade, but if for whatever reason that does not suffice to relieve the agony that the bird's in, then you can actually move the cage with the bird inside into a different place. Or if you have a fish that jumped out of the water and landed on the floor, if you know the fish is still alive, by putting it back into the water, it will continue to live. So the tzar balei chayim involved, even though fish is muktzeh, but you can return it to the water if you don't have a goy to do it for you, and you don't, and you know the animal, the fish is going to carry on living. The big question is pets. What is the deal with pets? In Shulchan Aruch, pets are not dealt with. And the closest we get to the discussion is that it tells us that a cat is considered as a wild animal, and therefore it fits into the categories regarding tzedah and all those type of things, that it be treated more like a wild animal rather than a domesticated animal. That's the closest that I found. We have dogs discussed in halacha, but they're never in the format of pets, but rather that if you have something which is edible by a dog, so it's not muktzeh, so therefore, and dogs are something that you have around everywhere. But keeping pets for company and having them in your house is not discussed I have not come across it in Shulchan Aruch. A little bit comes up in the contemporary poskim, our day and age of the 21st century, 20th century. So what I found so far is that pets are also muktzeh. There's a Barach Ozeruah. Now that's pretty early. The Reb Chaim, the son of the Ozeruah, who was Reb Yitzchak Mivina, who was the generation before the Maram Rothenberg, so you're going back to about the 12th or 13th century, already discusses it, that when people keep certain animals for
there just for their beauty or for their company. So he has a tzad to say that maybe they're considered as not mukta, but he says lo kiv rabbanon. And so there's a discussion, there's a mincha Shabbos, there's a Nezi Yisrael, I can throw out a lot of names that I looked at, and not that I looked them inside, it's all quoted. Shmir Shabbos Kilchosa, in the main part of his sefer, says animals are mukta. In the footnotes, he brings different studying, but he seems to go with the opinion that they remain mukta. Och Shabbos, whatever, Reuben holds that they are mukta. I can tell you that, as a child growing up in Chutz La'aretz, we had a dog on the premises, and my father taught us that a dog is mukta. We were not allowed to pet the dog on Shabbos because you can't move his hair, you can't move the animal. We were allowed to do tilta b'gufay, which means that to use a different part of your body so that you pet the animal with your foot but not with your hand. And that seems to be, from what I've so far researched, the general line, the halacha. The reason why I'm being so myrish is because there are a lot of people who are making on this. I have not yet seen inside a kula, although one of my chavus has told me that there is a kula written by Reb Osher Weiss. I have not found it because I have not found it safe enough to say, not because it doesn't exist, because I haven't done enough research on it, but I want at least to be Melamed Chus and all those people who are Mako would like to find a heter. So far, I haven't seen a heter inside. I've only heard a heter quoted. But so far, what I want to say is that from what I've seen is that animals, even if they are pets, are mukta on Shabbos. A Blinader will continue looking, and if I find a heter, at least so that we can be Melamed Chus and all the people who are Mako and that we don't have a heel to be Moiche, I'll try find, see if someone actually does bring a clear cut heter on such a thing. The more cases of mukta are utensils that have broken. Usable utensils that are good when they were whole and they could be used in Shabbos are, not mukta obviously, or maybe they're klishim rachta isu, depending, you know, if it's hot, we say it's a klishim rachta isu, but if it's a nice a fruit bowl or something like that, it is, not a klishim rachta isu. But once they break, so then it depends on what are you left with. If the pieces that you are left with have some use, even though you don't intend on using it for that use, then it does not revert to becoming mukta, it remains its original status. If, however, it broke on Friday, and you saw it broken and said, there's no way I'm using these little pieces for whatever it is that the Mara uses. Lotzu apitz luchisa, you use a broken kli as a cork for another kli. We don't do that today, but in the Gemara time they did that. Now you are not interested in doing it and you discard it. The moment you discard it, you've given it a status of mukta and it becomes, and therefore when Shabbos comes in, it's mukta. So if it breaks on Shabbos, it depends on whether it's usable or not usable. If it has a use, even though you're not interested in that use, it retains its status of non-mukta. If it becomes useless, it's mukta. If it broke on Erev Shabbos, so then the moment you discard it, even if it's useful, it is considered, it will then become mukta when Shabbos comes in. Which then takes us to another case, is what about if you have a whole kli, something which is complete and useful, yet a person discarded it and threw it away. So there is what to say, that if it was discarded on Erev Shabbos, then the owner has shown that he has no interest in such an item, so then it becomes mukta. But if it was discarded on Shabbos, it does not become. Something which is, it's interesting, I saw Shmir Shabbos Kilchosa brings that disposable items, that although they are quite whole when they are discarded, but since the normal is to discard them, so made at the moment they are used and considered as garbage, since that is the regular, it is the habitual way that people treat disposable items, then it becomes mukta when once you discard it. It's considered as broken and unusable. I would add, although I didn't see it written inside, I would add that it depends on the type of disposable items. There are some disposable items that are made of a fairly good material and can be washed once or twice or three times before they're discarded. And some people do, some people don't. And therefore it depends on what type of item it is. It could be that certain disposable items, if you have a fair amount of people that will reuse them, then they do not become mukta when they are discarded on Shabbos.